continuing along with the halachas of Amir La'akum. A quick review from what we started last week, that not only can we not tell the non-Jew to do malachas for us, whether it's malacha d'oraisa, malacha d'rabbanan, even if the non-Jew does the malacha for the Jew, one cannot benefit from that malacha. And we explain what's considered benefit, only direct benefit. They turned on the light, they turned on the stove, for you to use that light, for you to use that stove, something you couldn't do without it, the heated up water, you cannot use that. Indirect benefit means they take something away, they turned off a stove, and now you can sit more comfortably in the room, or they turned off a light, you can sleep, that's permissible. And we said additional benefit is also permissible. It means there was one light in the room, and they turned on another light, or there was sunlight in the room, and they put on the light, so long as you have the first light, in this case, to use, that it's still sunlight outside, or the original light is still on, then you can benefit, you can have additional benefit from the non-Jew. I mean, something they you could have used anyway, you could have worn the suit or the garment, and they just tidied it up, you would have worn it anyway, it's permissible to use. Anything that the non-Jew does on his own volition, he does it for himself, whether I know why he did it or not, but as long as he does it for himself, it's going to be permissible to benefit from that. Okay, now we're going to get into the sort of working from the Isser to the Heter, things that you can't do to things that are permissible to tell a non-Jew on Shabbos. Yes, question.
Question. You were away this Shabbos at a conference. There were 1,000 people there. The hotel locks were the electronic ones. Then they gave us a mechanical key, and they were to turn off the electronic locks for Shabbos so we could just use the mechanical key. So comes 10:30, some of us start schlepping up the stairs to our room. They hadn't turned off the mechanical locks yet. So we schlep all the way back downstairs. Were we permitted to say the mechanical locks, the electronic locks are still on and I can't get into my room? So that they would then turn off the electronic locks so we could get into our room. Or were we to sleep in the lobby all night?
With everybody.
Oh, what a party.
Right.
I mean, some people they did, but they didn't do them all.
Each one they had to
do. By the switchboard or something. And there's a way of doing each room, just like when you check in, and then when you check out, they fix it so your card doesn't work anymore.
That's a bit of a unique case, because there the non-Jew had the responsibility to do that job.
They were supposed to do it, yeah.
And they didn't do it. So really, we can consider they're really doing their own work.
Okay.
They're doing something for themselves, which they had to do beforehand.
Okay, good.
And there is a case, the Bir Halacha, the Chofetz Chaim, the Bir Halacha does speak of such a case where it was something was incumbent upon the non-Jew to do, or sort of he messed things up, so he has to rectify it for his own self, even though it is for the Jew.
Could you put that on the banner of, well, that was his job? So really had nothing to do whether a Jew was there or not. That was his stated job.
Yeah, I know it's it's not because I told we before Shabbos you can't tell a non-Jew, listen, on Shabbos I want you to do this thing. You can't do that because you're doing it for me. But in this case it was sort of part of the stipulation of renting out the facility was that they would make sure that the access to the room was could be done mechanically. Thank you.
Because they were supposed to do it.
Right.
It was their job.
Right. So that's in that case you could
touchy
permit.
Fine line.
Yeah, but I'm sure there were plenty of rabbis did that you ever ask.
Well, there were certain husbands that were just too angry to go around asking. They just sort of like, I'm going down telling them.
Right. Aren't there any rabbis there?
They were your rabbis.
They're
busy.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Fine. Now we'll get into hinting. What is the halacha of hinting? May one hint to a non-Jew to do malacha for the Jew. So there's two types of hintings. Okay? There's direct hinting and indirect hinting. Direct hinting is forbidden. You can't directly hint to a non-Jew to turn the light on. One way of direct hinting is like this. Now, I know you usually do that with your Polish or Russian or Hungarian cleaning woman help because they don't understand when you talk to them anyway, so you're just motioning the whole time, and that's why actually that's direct hinting, because that is the way you're communicating directly to the person. So you can't twitch your nose and they know that's what you're supposed to turn the light on. You can't go to the knob and turn your hand and they know to turn it on. You can't do that. You can't even go, let's say you're going up to the neighbor's house and you say, could you do me a favor? I forgot to do this before Shabbos. Could you do me a favor? Once you engage in some sort of positive talk with the person, instead of just a story like, that's already going to be forbidden. Well, see, even to say that, you go over and you say it the right way. You say, I can't sleep because I forgot to turn off my light. You're just sort of stating a fact. And then the non-Jew on his own should say, oh, do you want me to come over, turn on the light? At that point, you can't say yes.
You can?
You cannot say yes. Because yes is saying, yes, I want you to turn on the light. And that's already direct. Okay, even though it's hinting, but it's direct.
You can't nod then.
Huh?
You can't say yes, then you can't nod.
You can't nod. So you'll have to learn, you'll have to train yourself how to do it. You'll have to say, I would appreciate if the light would be turned off. Oh. You have to keep saying it in a very indirect way. And then if the non-Jew does it by himself, then it'll be permissible, provided there's no direct benefit.
Wait a second.
And we'll get that in a minute. Let's give the example that is given in halacha in the Peskim. Someone's the candle is burning. In the days of the Gemara when they had just oil and a wick lit, and trying to read by the candle, trying to learn by the candlelight, and the wick starts to char over, and if you flick off the excess ash, the excess charcoal, then the light will burn brighter. So you can say, oh, the light is not bright enough. And then the guy on his own, the non-Jew on his own, will come over and flick that off. That case is permissible. That we know, that's a given, that's permissible. Why? Because I've only indirectly hinted. I've said, oh, I can't read by this light. I haven't directly asked him to do something. I haven't told him to do something. I've sort of stated a fact of my inconvenience, and then the non-Jew on his own went to do it, and it's only additional benefit because I could have read by that light. It just makes it easier now that it's brighter. For example, there are a couple of lights on in this room. And let's say I wanted additional lights. I say, oh, I wish it was brighter in this room. And the non-Jew is there and turns on the additional light. I've only indirectly hinted, and it's only additional benefit, and therefore it's permissible. If it's direct hinting, by saying positively that either a motion with one's hand or any other part of the body, or saying that I would love for you to do this, I would like to ask you to come over to my house to rectify something, or even if it's indirect, but there's going to be direct benefit, there's no light on in the room, and you're going to say, oh, I wish the light was on in this room, then the non-Jew will turn it on, you can't benefit from it in Aya. Because even if he would do it by himself, you couldn't benefit from it. Right? But if the light is on in the room, and I say, oh, I can't sleep. Or you go over to the non-Jew and you say, it's our Sabbath, and we're not allowed to turn on and off lights, and I forgot to turn off the light before Shabbos. Then the non-Jew, if he or she says, oh, no problem, I'll come over, you can show them where it is. You can even show with them where the switch is.
Say that again. Could you just repeat that?
So you can go over to the non-Jew and state this fact that it's I can't really sleep because I can't turn off the light and I forgot to turn off the light before Shabbos.
Right.
Then they say, would you like me to turn off the light? It would be great if the light would be off. I would appreciate it greatly if I wouldn't have this light on. Still just sort of beating around the bush enough and avoiding giving direct command that, yes, I want you to do this.
Even if you get direct benefit, ultimately.
No. So that's not direct benefit. That's why not this case of turning off the light. We explained turning off the light is not direct benefit. Taking away an impediment, taking away something is never considered a direct benefit. So the gas was left on, or the stove was left on, and it's going to be another 48 hours because it's a Shabbos and a Yom Tov, and it's going to be much too hot. So you say, oh, the oven was left on and it's so hot in the kitchen. Then the manager comes, turns it off. That's indirect benefit. That was indirect hinting. That's permissible.
Wait, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
We have a neighbor in our building who, like, knows the whole Shabbos boy thing down pat. Like, he knows, like, when we go to
they
him...
They must have come to my other shiur.
Right, took the course.
Yes.
Okay. So the question is, when I go to him and I say, oh, you know, Devin, I accidentally, you know, left the light on in my room, or whatever it is, and he knows, like, to just come in and do it. Isn't that really me directly saying it to him? Because he knows what I'm really saying. You know what I'm saying? Like,
no,
he knows what I really mean. He knows by me saying, oh, you know, I accidentally, you know, left the light on in my room, and I can't sleep, and he goes and does it. It's really me directly saying it to him. Because it's like you're saying, the motioning, you know, really means to
no,
turn it off.
But the way the halakha looks at it is, how am I addressing the situation? Am I directly hinting it, or am I indirectly hinting it? For me to directly, that means I am being a participant in this malacha that's going to be happen in too direct of a way that there's still the gezeira was imposed upon the Jew not to do such a thing. If the non-Jew knows. So then I've done what I am allowed to do, and then after that it's not an issue. The truth is no difference if he figures it out for the first time or he knows it in the last 10 times. You'd be surprised. Goyim who don't know, you can sometimes sit there for 5 minutes back and forth just trying to figure out. Yeah, I mean the guy has a PhD and you're trying to get, you know, I'm not allowed to turn on the light. Oh, that's terrible. You know, like, it's that sympathizing. They don't know what to... So you'd be surprised. But back in Europe, it was very common that the guy knew what to do. I mean, they had much more of an issue in terms of fires and heating up food and transferring things over. So, and then there was the regular Shabbos guy that knew.
So even if you tell the guy that lives next to you or next door in your building,
right,
and you say, okay, you tell them before Shabbos. Okay, so just to let you know, like, I can't say yes when you say, oh, do you want me to turn on the light, or, you know, whatever, I can't do this, I can't, you know, and when I say this, it really means this, like, that's totally fine?
Again, if you're in, no, unless, you have to indirect, you can't say that when I cough twice, I want you to turn the light on.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Because that's direct, but you're allowed to say what's within the parameters of halakha, what they allow you to say. In other words, I can't sleep because the light is off, or the light is on. Right. That's permissible.
And then when they do it, you're also not allowed to say thank you, right?
That's also, yeah, Mr. Shlomo Zalman brings in one place, they bring from Shlomo Zalman that you can't even say thank you because that's, yeah, it's difficult why that is.
Can you say I'm not allowed to say thank you?
There we go, that's amazing. Oh, that's so much.
Right.
Could you say I appreciated that?
Yes, that you can say.
Oh,
that you can say.
Oh, what's the difference?
Can you start off directly by saying that I would appreciate it if the lights were off in my whatever?
Yes, that you could say. That's
so you
indirect.
You don't have to go through the whole. You could just start off with the. It doesn't seem so indirect. It seems so obvious.
But they're saying I would appreciate if the lights are off. Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah, that's still.
Yeah,
so that's still indirect, right? Yeah. Right. I think you know that's part of the rationale is to sort of to make the gap between my telling and him doing it on his own for something that's only indirect benefit or additional benefit to make that wider. And as long as you have that, then it's going to be permissible.
You mentioned about the gas being on and it being too warm to turn it off. In my stove, the gas likes to go off on its own, especially when I put a blech on top of it. Am I allowed to turn
the gas or the fire?
The gas.
Yeah.
And the fire. The fire will go out and the gas will stay on.
Oh, the gas will stay on. In that case,
therefore,
even the Jew could turn it off.
So I can turn
even
it
the
off.
Jew can turn it off. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you need to change the
What I know is the fire is on and it's too hot. Yeah, if there's just the gas is on, that's not going to make it hot. Right.
Okay. So it's just dangerous then.
If it's a sakana, do you need a shinui or you could just do it? It's
better. It could be as better to do it as shinui, yeah. You do it with in between your knuckles to turn the knob. Okay. You know, in the case, let's say you have a live-in help, or you have someone, a neighbor, who comes by, you can tell them after Shabbos, like in your case that you said that the neighbor sort of knows, you can tell them after Shabbos, this is included indirect hinting, say after Shabbos, you know, my kid turned on the radio, and you know that we don't like the radio going on in our house, why didn't you turn it off? And then the next time, he'll know that that's what he's supposed to do.
Yeah, but you say, why
don't
you turn it off? That's kind of...
I know, he's
going to
say, it's kind of rude.
The heck with you? I'm coming over.
And again, you're not saying, oh, you mean, yeah, all right, let's see, depends on your relationship.
Right. Can't you just say, just keep that in mind? I mean, you don't be abrupt like that. Yeah, I don't worry, you won't do anything.
So you can't say directly after Shabbos?
No, saying directly after Shabbos is like saying before Shabbos. You know, when the light is off, I want you to turn it on in this room.
Same, but that's the same thing.
But this is indirect. What you're saying is that you're saying that when the radio was turned on, why didn't you turn it off? You're not saying, I want you to turn it off. You're not asking him to turn it off. You're indirectly saying that this is what I would like you to do. And that's why it's permissible.
No, but remember the example that I said, if you go to your neighbor after Shabbos and you tell him, like, the whole thing, like, okay, sometimes I'll come to you and I'll say, you know, it's really bright in my room and that means for you to turn it off. So what's the difference?
When it's indirect, that person's mind has to make some leap to be part of the decision-making process. Even if it's totally slight, there's still an intention on his part that he has to come to it and then decide to do it. He's not your agent because you're not directing him to do anything. He's still independent and comes to it.
So, but even after Shabbos?
After Shabbos is before the next Shabbos.
Right. Again, after Shabbos is a way, there's an opportunity to indirectly hint because something happened. He was in the house, let's say, when the radio was turned on. Okay. For some reason, you didn't hint then. And after Shabbos, the one way of hinting would be is that, why didn't you turn off the radio? And then that's indirectly saying, in his mind, he'd say, oh, when the radio gets turned on by mistake, they want me to turn it off. That's indirect. Turning off the radio is not a direct benefit. It's taking away the noise, and that's permissible.
See, I have like marital command and the indirect marital command. Marital command is, please take out the trash. Indirect is, boy, the trash can's really full.
We call it woman speak.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Okay, let's get moving to another section here. The next section is called Shvus to Shvus, which is two derabbanans. Now, the whole concept of telling a non-Jew to do something for me is only midrabbanan. That we explained already last week. If I'm only having the non-Jew do a malacha derabbanan, if I'm only asking him to do a malacha derabbanan, then that's called a shvus to shvus, two derabbanans. And if it's two derabbanans, then there are several categories, several instances where it should be permissible to directly tell him or ask him to do the malacha, to do the derabbanan, that is. Okay? Turning on a light is doraisa. So you won't be able to have him turn on the light. Lighting a fire on the stove is doraisa. Cooking up water is doraisa. You can't have him do that. But if it's only rabbinic in nature, then it's going to be permissible even to tell him directly. So the first category of heter is when it's a hefsid meruba, if it's a great financial loss. It will be permissible to directly tell the non-Jew to do a malacha drabban. For example, somebody has a freezer that's fully stocked with meats and all sorts of things that are in the freezer. And the plug gets pulled out. a child pulls out the plug, okay, and it's Friday night. If it's an hour before Shabbos is over, it's not a problem. It will stay over until then. You just put all in yourself. But if it's Friday night and it's warm then where the freezer is, and you're worried the things could get ruined. In such a case, to prevent this financial loss, you can tell a guy, plug the freezer back in. Okay? Plugging it back in is electricity. According to the majority of the poskim, it's only the midrabanan. It will be permissible to do such a thing. Someone's air conditioner starts freezing over. If this will be a financial loss, because it will get ruined, if the air conditioner will get ruined, you'll have to call a repairman after Shabbos. You can tell the non-Jew, turn off the air conditioner because it's freezing over and you're worried it's going to get ruined. And the $100 air conditioner will be broken. You don't like that one?
No. I don't like this whole idea, because if your house, chas v'shalom, if one's house, chalila, is burning down, you can't say, put out the fire. But if your air conditioner, your $500 air conditioner, is going to be ruined, it's okay to go to your goy and say, it's going to be ruined, fix it, turn it off, whatever. I don't have a big problem with this. I know this is a lack of betachin. I know this is a lack of understanding.
I can see the difference is that it's deraisa versus derabanan, but I don't understand why electricity is different from fire. I thought it was the same thing.
Or turning a different fire.
Electricity is the same as fire? In what way?
I thought electricity was the same as fire. Therefore, it's deraisa. Therefore, you can't ask a guy directly to turn on the light.
No. The turning on the light has nothing to do with the electricity.
Oh, it just has to do with the benefiting part?
No.
There's electricity when you turn on a light, and then there's the bulb that gets turned on. That bulb that gets turned on is the doraisa part of it. Either because the filament inside becomes red hot, so that's considered havara, like an actual fire, or
so
some
it has
say
to do with
it's
a light
bishul,
bulb.
Because it has to do with the light bulb. But that's what we're talking about. These cases are electric appliances, which all you're dealing with is electricity. Now, the Chazon Ish held that when you turn on electricity, you're connecting the circuit, that's considered binyan. He said that's tantamount to building something, and that's doraisa, according to the opinion of Chazon Ish. And when you shut off the electricity, you're disconnecting the circuit, you're breaking that circuit, and that's considered soser, demolishing something that was built. That was the chiddush of the Chazon Ish. For a Jew to do that, it could be you're playing with the one opinion that holds deraisa. But when you're dealing with a non-Jew doing it, the joke we say is that the non-Jew doesn't have the hold of the Chazon Ish. In other words, in terms of Amir al-Akum, in terms of having the guy do it, we go with the majority poskim that electricity is really only a drabbanan, that you're starting something new, so there's really the isser of molad, that you're creating something new. Creating something new is an isser drabbanan. When we deal with a light, that's why it's daraisa. Turn on a light is daraisa, or a fire is daraisa, or cooking is daraisa.
So how do you answer each question?
So your question was of the fire. Putting out a fire is what? Is a malacha d'oraisa. Putting out a fire is one of the 39 malachas. Havara is starting a fire, and mechabe, extinguishing a fire, is a malacha d'oraisa. And that's what the difference is. You could ask even further, but maybe we'll wait for another example. But that is the difference. That is the difference. No, when we give some more information, you'll see.
It gets off the topic, because then you think, well, surely Hashem doesn't want my house to burn, not mine, someone's house to burn down. But then you think, well, it certainly does, and I'm sure that there's a good reason for it, but we don't understand it. But at the time, it's awful.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a different class.
A different class. When is that? Which class is that?
You gotta hope the neighbor sees the fire, calls the fire department.
Even
so, you.
That's right, and we said in that case you're allowed to say there's a fire. If someone, again, not dealing with the question of somebody's life, right, life in danger. Just the building itself, the financial loss. So the Gemara says, we mentioned, you could say kol ha'machabe inu mafsid. Whoever puts out this fire will we'll get a reward. Whoever puts out this fire will
have my eternal thanks, my eternal appreciation.
Right.
You are allowed to say that?
You're allowed to say such a thing. Yeah, yeah. Whoever puts out the fire won't lose out. That's the expression. In other words, that indicates that I wanted to put it out, and even that I will pay him handsomely for his services.
So can you go to your neighbor's house specifically?
You can go and scream that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can go there. Yeah.
You don't have to just yell.
You can't say put out the fire. You can't even say, and this is where we began before, you can't even say that
it would be nice if
come over, yes, I need you to come over to my house because there's something I need you to do. And that's why that when you need even a simple thing like the light in the room to be turned off, or you need the something simple that we said before as an additional benefit, that's where you can't say to him, I need to ask you a favor, come over to my house. Because you see, even in the case of the fire, all you're allowed to do is say, whoever puts out the fire won't lose out. That's what you're allowed to say. So you see, that's the maximum of what you're allowed to do.
He's putting out a fire, removing an impediment. Is that?
So that's why it's considered, I don't have to stop him from doing it, because that's considered indirect benefit. Right. It's indirect benefit.
Whoever puts out the fire
will not lose out. Okay, so that's why this heter is limited to things that are midrabbanan only. The child turns on an appliance, turns on the KitchenAid. If the motor runs for the next 20 hours, it's very possible it'll burn out the motor. That for many people could be a financial loss, to spend a few $100 on a new machine. So that's a financial loss. It's only turning off pulling out the plug and turning off the machine. That's midrabbanan. Someone left some expensive papers outside, and it can be ruined in the rain, or can blow away in the wind. All you ask him is to take it in from, if there's no Erev, you're taking him from outside to inside, and with Rabbanan, from a backyard to the house, a Carmelist, it will be permissible to say such a thing.
So last week when I asked you, if your house is hot, can you turn on the air conditioner to take away the impediment of the heat, and he said no. So you can't turn the air conditioner on for comfort reasons, but if your air conditioner is about to ice over, you could turn it off through indirect asking.
Right.
Because it's a financial loss.
Because that's a financial loss. And you could ask, I'm sorry, you could ask directly.
Directly, right.
This you could ask directly. When it's doing a financial loss and it's only midrabbanan being done, you could ask directly. Yeah.
You had talked about the heat from the oven being too high. What about if someone brushes past your thermostat and sends it up to 80, and it's too hot in the house?
Mm-hmm.
Where does that fall in?
That falls into it's extreme discomfort. And that's another category that we have when you have the extreme discomfort. Extreme discomfort or extreme physical discomfort, even extreme emotional discomfort, one can directly tell a non-Jew to do something. For example, someone brushes by your thermostat and turns it up to 80, and you're sweltering in the house, you can have the non-Jew put it down. It's only midrabbanan. In this case, it could be even a grumma. It's the home halach is indirect because it just turns the thermostat and then it sets off something to then put the temperature down or shut off the heat. That's going to be permissible. Another example, someone, Chas v'Shalom, gets a burn. They don't have to be rushed to the hospital, but they're in considerable amount of pain. They could have a non-Jew apply cream. Okay? This happens sometimes with children. They get chapped lips or chapped hands, and it's, for them, their pain tolerance is not as much as an adult, and they could be in extreme pain. If there is extreme discomfort, you could have a non-Jew apply Vaseline or apply cream or apply chapstick to that area.
So if you're in extreme discomfort in the summertime because your air conditioner was not on, then why can't you have that turned on?
If one is in extreme discomfort because of the excessive heat, and the air conditioner was shut off or was forgot to put on, miscalculated the temperature, or a child turned it off, and it's an extreme discomfort if it's a small room or small area, or there's a lot of people, it's a shavar brachis, it is permissible to have an aju turn it on. For example, if there's no heat in the house, it's the winter time, and the heat is set too low, or it stopped, or someone shut it off, it's getting extremely cold. Sure, you could bundle up with coats, that's extreme discomfort. One cannot function in a normal way. You can have a non-Jew turn on the heat. These are all only midrabanan, and because of extreme discomfort, one is permissible. It's permissible to do that. Someone has shom. Someone in the house has to be taken to the hospital, and the people in the house don't know what happened. You could have a non-Jew call up the hospital using a telephone. There's only midrabanan. You can have a non-Jew call up the hospital to find out what happened, to find out that everything's okay, to calm one's nerves.
An extreme situation that actually happened was our fire, the security alarm went off, and all Shabbos we just let it go because we didn't even ask a non-Jew to. We just suffered through the whole thing.
And while the alarm was going off.
Well, it was instead of a bell. I guess something was
like
wrong
a
with
siren,
the alarm
yeah.
or whatever, and it stayed on all of Shabbos. And
we
didn't think to ask a non-Jew.
Perfect example. Someone's car alarm goes off. Or the house, the burglar alarm inside the house. Those sirens are ear piercing. Okay? You can't sleep, you can't function, you get headaches, it's disturbing everybody. You could have a non-Jew shut it off.
And how direct can you be?
As direct as you want.
Okay.
If you want to bang him over the head until he does it, that's also fine.
We suffered with it.
If you won't be able to do it anymore, yeah.
Well, because the battery started to die as the day progressed. No, it was. We break the circuit for Shabbat anyway. All right, so we leave a door open that keeps the circuit broken. All right, but somehow the alarm.
I see.
It's just like a whining sound, and the battery, I guess, was dying. And as the day progressed, the whining was at a lower tone, but we just sat for the whole thing.
What about the chirping of change the battery for your smoke detector?
For the smoke alarm, yeah.
It might have been the smoke detector. Who knows what it was?
Yeah, depending what the how severe it is. Now,
it happens, it's time to go to bed, and everyone's in bed, and then...
Right, and it starts going off, and it's a bedroom. You can't muffle the sound. You could have a non-Jew turn it on to take out the battery. And it's a drop on it, take out the battery, and you can have them do it in order to be able to go to sleep. Same thing with a child who needs the light turned off in the room. Turn off the light, you could have a non-Jew. Better to hint, but you could have a non-Jew do it because it's indirect, because just taking away the light, and because it's extreme discomfort in this situation that the person is in. Another two examples, we have to finish up. So let's go two more examples here where it's going to be permissible to even directly tell the non-Jew, and one of them is in a case of a mitzvah. For a mitzvah purpose, you have to bring, let's say, a siddur to shul, and the person needs this particular siddur, otherwise they won't be able to daven, and there's no Erev. You could have a non-Jew bring it through an area which is only a Carmelis, which is most of our areas. You have guests in the house, and you don't have enough blankets or pillows or chairs. You can have a non-Jew bring it over. This is also permissible. Certainly if you didn't have, let's say, wine or challah for Shabbos, you have to borrow from a neighbor and there's no Erev between your houses, you could have a non-Jew bring this over. Again, it's only midrabanan to go from your house to the next. We're assuming it's not a Rishus HaRabim, which is most of the time, and it's for the Shabbos meals, for the Suda Shabbos, for the mitzvah, and therefore that's going to be permissible as well.
Your examples of financial hardship or discomfort, is that a very subjective thing? Like, for example, in the case of a $100 loss of an air conditioner, somebody might make $30,000 a year, somebody might make $300,000 a year, so therefore, to one, it's an annoyance, to another, it's a real hardship.
Right.
So do you have to take it to
absolutely
each person?
Absolutely. It goes by each person's financial status. What would we consider? How do you classify that? So it was once someone gave the following definition, or the litmus test for it is as follows. If a person would would lose. He has $5 in his pocket, and he lost the $5. Say, oh, I thought I had $5. All right, I don't know where it is. He doesn't think about it the rest of the day. If a person would have a $100 bill in their pocket, and then loses it, and he keeps thinking of the whole day, he keeps thinking like, what happened to that $100? Where did I put it? Did I lose it? So then, $100 for that person is of a financial loss, which is considered hefsed merubah. If it's $20, well, it depends on the person. So that would be the case, you know. So if it's a little appliance that's not expensive, it's not going to, yeah, it'd be a pain in the neck to go buy a new one. But if it's not going to be a financial loss, then the same would be also. It is somewhat subjective by discomfort. Yeah. And then there's another example, and that is for, we'll end with this, and that is for kavod habrios, for human dignity. And so, for example, a person is in shul, and their dress or the suit catches on a nail and totally rips. So now they're stuck in the washroom, and they tell somebody, get me a change of clothing. Okay, otherwise you're going to be stuck in the bathroom or stuck in some room in the shul for the rest of Shabbos. You can have a non-Jew bring over a new set of clothing. Okay, for human dignity, to be able to go out, to be presentable, is going to be mutter to do such a thing. An interesting example that's brought is, let's say somebody's making a shalom zakar in their house, or a shavu brachas in their house. And everything is set, and they realize they totally forgot to buy the drinks. There's no drinks. There's no soda, there's no juice, nothing. You put water out on the table. For the person, it will be tremendously mortifying. You know, everything is set up, and it's normal to have drinks at this party. They don't have. That, for that person's own dignity, kavod habrios, you could have a non-Jew go buy the drinks. What is the non-Jew doing? Walking to the store, paying money, that's only with Rabbanan.
He's driving,
that's on his own accord to drive. He decides to drive instead of walk. But he could walk just as well. He can do such a thing. Again, these are all cases that the person is doing with Rabbanan. That's why you do have to know other halakhas aside from just the halakhas of Amir La'akum. You have to know sort of what you're asking him to do, what malacha he's doing. Is it only with Rabbanan? But in the cases of Omid Rabbanan, someone that's a hefsed merubah, financial loss, if it's extreme discomfort or pain or stress, or if it's extreme discomfort in terms of being in the room, or having the light on, or having an alarm shut off, all of these cases are going to be mutter. But in the case of a mitzvah, when it's in order to perform a mitzvah, it's also going to be permissible. And this last case was kavod habrios, when it's in terms of saving face of a person to save embarrassment from a person.
Then you could ask directly.
And in all these cases, you could ask directly because it's only to ask him to do a malacha drabbana.
So the first thing that you said, the shvus. Yeah.
Right.
So
that's this.
So we were saying that last week that, let's say you're sitting in your room and you forgot to turn the air conditioners on because whatever, and you're just a little warm. You're not like, you know, whatever, but it's a little hot and whatever. So you're not allowed to say it because the non-Jews not getting, because it would be direct benefit for you.
So doing it for the Jew.
But doesn't that fall under the category? Like, even if it's not in extreme discomfort, it's a Rabbanan, and then you're asking the non-Jew, which is the Rabbanan. So can't you, even in...
No, so we said, this shvus, these two Rabbanans are only permissible in the following cases.
If
it's great financial loss, if it's extreme discomfort, if it's for human dignity, if it's for mitzvah, then it's permissible.
In any other case, right, Everything else applies.
That's right.